Well, dear friends, some of you will recall that in our last visit with you, we commenced the study of the book of Hebrews, and at that time we got to the first verse in the fourth chapter of the book of Hebrews. And this will be the bridge that we will use to connect between that which has gone before and that which is to follow. Let us therefore fear, lest the promise being left us of entering into his rest, any should seem to come short of it. I would remind you again, dear friends, that the Apostle Paul, who wrote this epistle, wrote it for the benefit of the Hebrew Christians in that early day, in the Ephesus period of the church. And at that time, of course, he had realized, as some of the other apostles too, that the dispensation of special blessing, the 70 weeks of favor that had been set apart for Israel, had come to an end. Before that, Jesus, during his ministry, he declared that he was sent for the lost of the house of Israel, and the message was to Israel in particular. But of course, Jesus, as opportunity presented himself, he found faith sometimes among those that did not belong to the commonwealth of Israel, and he rewarded them too. He gave them little crumbs that fell, as it were, from the rich man's table. You remember, dear friends, how on one occasion Jesus declared, "I have not found so great faith in all Israel." And you remember the sermon he preached at the little well in Samaria to the Samaritan woman. She too was a stranger from the commonwealth of Israel. But generally speaking, the message was to Israel. But with the end of those 70 weeks of favor, you remember Jesus had declared to them that their house was left unto them desolate. He had declared also how often he would have gathered them together as a hen doth her chicks under her wings, but she would not. All of these were indications how that the message had been particularly for Israel. But the message had gone out to the Gentiles too. And you remember that the first convert was Cornelius, and Peter was blessed to use the key that God, through Christ, had given him, that he might open the door, as it were, to the Gentiles. However, before this, there were Gentiles that had embraced the Jewish religion. They were proselytes. They had come over, you see. And there were some, of course, who had heard of the prophet and believed the reports that were circulated concerning the prophet, Jesus of Nazareth. And so Paul is addressing Hebrew Christians. In other words, those who would be familiar with the Hebrew Scriptures, with the history of Israel. And this, of course, gave him a stepping stone, or shall I say, a plank on which to stand, a springboard, as it were, because he could remind them of how God had dealt with Israel in the past, and why it was that now the message was going out among the Gentiles. It was a little difficult for them to see. And you remember, even after the Apostle Paul had started on his missionary journeys, I think it was at Iconium, he had preached. And they said, "Oh, we'd like to hear what you're preaching about. Come and teach us again next Sunday," or the next Sabbath, rather. And they came the next Sabbath. But lots of Gentiles came too. And Paul told them at that time that the message he had was not merely for Israel, but for the Gentiles as well. And that's where they no longer had any use for him. They put him out of the synagogue, you remember. So you see, dear friends, that it was then that he said, since you have rejected it, we'll go unto the Gentiles. Now, of course, we say that these Gentile Christians were hard put to it to understand just what was taking place. Had Moses been rejected? Had the law been set aside? Did this prophet of Nazareth make such a big difference? Why was it that now the message was going out to others and that Israel was to take the back seat? But so the Apostle Paul, he reminds them that God at sundry times and in divers manners had spoken in times past unto their fathers and by way of the prophets. But in these last days he spoke unto them by his Son, whom he had appointed the heir of all things. And he told how this one, because he had been faithful to God, had been highly exalted. And he quotes the scriptures of old. Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. A scepter of righteousness is the scepter of thy kingdom. Thou hast loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Therefore God, even thy God, hath anointed thee with the oil of gladness above thy fellows. How much of this they could understand, we may not know. But we do know this, that it was the truth, and the Spirit of truth would, as Jesus had declared, guide them into the deeper aspects of that truth. And so then finally the apostle brings to their attention the fact that those of old that God had so beautifully delivered from the bondage of Egypt and had led through the sea, that they, having rejected the messenger of Jehovah, had themselves been rejected. And he shows in type, as it were, how this happened. He says, speaking for God, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me or tried me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. You see, dear friends, God can overlook an error of judgment, but he cannot overlook the error of the heart. And Israel, he said, they do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. Isn't that a strange thing for God to say to a people whom he took by the hand and led out of the land of Egypt? So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God, but exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ, if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. While it is said, today, if you'll hear my voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation. Some, when they heard, did provoke. Albeit not all that came out of Egypt by Moses, but with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And so that we might know how they sinned, he says, unto whom swear he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that were disobedient. Your text says, believe not. The Greek text is, were disobedient. So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. You see, in other words, in the first instance, he says disobedient, and the second, unbelieving. And then he says, let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. He adds, for unto you was the gospel preached, as well as unto them. For the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard. Now, dear friends, I'd like to dwell for a little while on what God had promised the children of Israel. God had promised the children of Israel a rest. Oh, he didn't spell it out exactly that way, but he told them that there was a rest that they might enter into, that he would deliver them from the land of bondage. He would bring them into the land that he had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob before them. They were born in the land of Egypt. These, who had, of course, not themselves brought themselves into slavery, but they were enslaved because their fathers, who brought them down into the land, had sinned against their brother. Virtually, it was because of the fact that they sinned against Joseph that these children of that generation were born, as it were, in Egypt, and there enslaved. They labored and labored and labored, and there was no rest. So what God was promising them, because they were the children of faithful Abraham, he promised them that they would enter into the land of Canaan, and Canaan for them would be a land of rest, peace and rest, a land, as it were, flowing with milk and honey. Now, in Joshua, or rather, first let me take you into this part of it, in Deuteronomy, Moses, in the 6th chapter, the 25th verse, "And it shall be our righteousness if we observe to do all these commandments before the Lord our God as he has commanded us." Now, this is because of the fact that when God had brought the children of Israel to Sinai, there to make known to them his will concerning them, it would have been righteousness for them, even as it had been for Father Abraham. Faith, however, would be the basis of that righteousness, because it wasn't that Abraham himself was righteous. No, he was a sinner. He was like all other men in many respects, but his faith was accounted to him for righteousness. And so God gave them his law. He made known to them his will. And if they endeavored to do that will, it would have been an indication of their faith, and it would have been accounted to them for righteousness too. "It shall be our righteousness if we observe to do all these commandments before the Lord our God as he hath commanded us." You see, that's what it would be. But Moses warns them. He says, "You're not righteous in yourselves. Your righteousness, which will be yours, will only be because of the faith that you exercise in obedience to the Father's will, as Abraham exercised it." So that in the 9th chapter of Deuteronomy, and we're commencing at the 4th verse, Moses says, "Speak not thou in thine heart, after that the Lord thy God has cast them out from before thee, saying, For my righteousness the Lord hath brought me in to possess this land. But for the wickedness of the nations, the Lord doth drive them out from before thee, not for thy righteousness, or for the uprightness of thine heart dost thou go to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, and that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto the fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand, therefore, that the Lord thy God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for thy righteousness, for thou art a stiff-necked people." Now, dear friends, that's pretty clear, isn't it? In other words, in one place he says, yes, it's your righteousness. It'll be your righteousness. Surely it would be their righteousness if they were obedient to the will of God. Now, you and I are not righteous, but the scriptures tell us that the righteousness of the law is fulfilled in us if we walk not according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. See, so that God, recognizing the inability of man to do perfectly the law of God, was willing to account righteousness to those who would, with sincerity of heart, do the best that they could. And you remember, when Jesus did his works in his day, he would say them, according to thy faith, so be it unto you. This is the importance of the matter, dear friends. Without this faith, it is impossible to please God. Faith is basic. If you have a hope, it must be based on what God has given you. And what God has given you, we call faith. Because the apostle says, faith is the substance, the basis, the groundwork of the things that you hope for. It's the conviction you have of things that are not seen. Now, this is the way that the great logician Paul puts it, you see. He shows that faith is basic. Now, when God promised them rest, yes, in a sense, it was a physical rest. But, dear friends, there is a physical rest in which there is no faith. The ship that gets into a storm at sea, it's thrown about, cast about, and suddenly the storm ceases and there's a calm. And we say the vessel rests in the calm. Actually, the vessel has no experience. There's nothing sentient about the vessel. The vessel has no experience. We merely use language to accommodate, that's all. When God promised them rest, physical rest in Canaan, it would be in the proportion of their faith. That is, in the proportion of their obedience to God. If you believe that God is, that's the first thing. You must also believe that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And that doesn't mean that you're coming from the groundwork of an atheist or an agnostic. That holds true for you and for me. You must believe that God is. Oh, you say, I have no trouble with that. And that he is the rewarder of those who diligently seek him. You say, I believe that too. But do you believe? The only evidence that we have that you believe it is in what you do, in compliance with that. In other words, faith is not sufficient. And James says that very clearly. Faith without works is dead. A man was out in a rowboat. He had two oars. Well, he used the one oar, and of course he went around in a circle this way. He used the other oar, and he went around in a circle this way. He didn't get anywhere. But when he used both oars, he made progress. So faith isn't sufficient, nor are works sufficient. But they've got to be combined. It was because of this that Israel failed to enter into that rest. They entered into the land all right, and it would have been rest for them had they been obedient to the will of God and driven out the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites that dwelt in that land. But let's remember, dear friends, that the apostle who writes this to the Hebrews is the very one who says those things which happened to them happened to them in a typical way, for types and shadows, but they were recorded for us, for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. So you see, dear friends, we're to look and see why they failed to enter into the rest that God has promised. He says, to whom swear he they should not enter into his rest, but to them that were disobedient. So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. You see, their disobedience and their unbelief are entwined. They're twins. You can't separate the two. These are Siamese. If you try to separate them, you kill both of them. You've got to have both faith and works. Works alone, that won't give you the peace of God that surpasses all human understanding. There are busy people that are so busy and about doing God's work, they never have time to build themselves up spiritually. On the other hand, there may be some that are so busy about the other world that they don't see the opportunities that are immediately before them, you see. So we find, he says, God promised them a rest. They didn't enter into it. They didn't enter into it because of disobedience and unbelief. What was the disobedience? God says, I want you to go in there and drive them out. Moses has said, it won't be because of your righteousness that you're going in there. I'm sending you, says Jehovah God, into that land of Canaan as my executor. The inhabitants, the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, all of these that live in the land, their iniquity has come up before me, and time for judgment has arrived. I want you to go in and do that. Well, now, dear friends, did they do it? They fraternized. Even as they approached the land and were coming through the borderland, do you remember how the Gibeonites came along? They said, oh, we've come a long, long journey. We know that you are the children of God, that he is with you. The God of Israel is the only God. We'd like you to enter into a covenant with us, that you won't kill us like you did some of these other tribes and neighbors here in the borderland of Canaan, and Joshua and the men of Israel entered into a covenant, a league with these people, only to find that they weren't what they had professed. But God did not let them go back on their word. He made them live by their word. And these people lived among them and were a thorn in their flesh all the days. And with a thorn in the flesh, how can you have rest? This wasn't the kind of a thorn that Paul spoke of that he asked to be removed. This was a different type of a thorn. And so you see, he says, now, let us who are the Israel of God today fear lest a promise left us, or this promise having been left us, we should come short of entering into this rest of God. And then he says, unto us was the gospel preached, as well as to them. The good tidings that they could take in the land, and if they were obedient to God, it would be for them a land of peace and rest. But when the Apostle Paul says these things were recorded for us, what did he mean? He meant just what is implied here, dear friends. God delivered you when he delivered me from bondage to the land of sin and death. We are the antitypical Israel of God. We came under the blood while we were still in the land of Egypt. We've been passed through the sea. And as we have been journeying along, dear friends, like those Israelites, they might have been thinking, oh, how glorious it's going to be when we get into that land of Canaan. God says he's going to drive those people out from before us. After all our laboring here in this land of Egypt, all the toil and sweat and tears, it's going to be wonderful. And with thoughts like that in their minds, they would not have thought of the hardship of the way. Paul says, speaking a slight of faith, but for a moment. And certainly they're not to be compared with the great exceeding and eternal weight of glory. You know, if you've got any troubles of your own, if you want them to be lighter, you have to forget yourself and think of somebody else. If you bury yourself in someone else's troubles, you find that your own become lighter. You go to the hospital to visit somebody that's sick there. They were way down in the dumps, but when you came in with your smiling face, oh, they became radiant too. They reflected you sick. And by the time you left, oh, they were cheered. How did you feel when you left there? Sometimes, dear friends, you go in there to give them a blessing, but you walk off with them yourself. Because of the fact that you've given of yourself and your own burden became lighter as you ministered unto others. The Israelites, instead of thinking the sweet and precious thoughts concerning the Jehovah that had delivered them, brought them under the blood and passed them through the sea, and who were caring for them. Their clothes didn't wax old. Their shoes didn't wear through. They had manna supplied to them from heaven. You think with all of that, that they would have had an appreciation of Jehovah their God. The only reason that God was dealing with them at all was because of their father, Abraham. You and I also are unprofitable servants. And it's just because God is our Father, because He loves us, that He deals with us, He bears with us. He said concerning Israel, on two occasions, He said to Moses, let me destroy this people and I'll make of you a new nation. But on another occasion, when Balaam would have cursed the children of Israel, God said, I see no interest in this Jacob, but I see no propensity. You mean there wasn't any there? Oh, yes, there was. Hadn't he twice said, I'll destroy them, Moses, and I'll make of you? Of course he did. But he refused to see it. And that's the way it is with our God, too, with the antithetical Israel. It isn't that there isn't iniquity and perversity with us. But we are His people. And because we are His people, as Paul also says in Romans in the 8th chapter, God causes all things to work together for good to those that love the Lord, the called according to His purpose. Now you see then, dear friends, a rest is promised to us too. And Israel might have entered into the rest of God, which would have been a rest of faith. It would have involved the physical rest, of course, in the last. But that physical rest, you see, was contingent upon their faithfulness in their faith, in their belief in God and the doing of His will. And if this was recorded for our admonition, what is the significance? Certainly the Canaan that God has promised us is not heaven. Oh, it could be heaven too in this sense. But for Israel, the land of Canaan was a land in which they had to battle with the Canaanites, subdue them, drive them out, destroy them. And the little Canaan that really God has given to you is the kingdom of your heart. And God says, the Canaanites dwelling in your heart, they've been there a long, long time. They think they own the place. Envy, hatred, malice, strife, evil speaking, gossiping, murmuring, all of these things. Is there any of that in your heart? Nasty weather? Oh, yeah. Who are you complaining to? About or against? Nasty weather? Could you do better? Well, at any rate, you see, dear friends, these Canaanites are entrenched in our hearts. And if we would have the peace that God has promised, you see, the promise still remains. Somebody's going to enter into this rest. There will be 144,000 to begin with that will enter into this rest. Oh, there will be others, the world of mankind will come to in this rest in due time too. They're going to have their wilderness wanderings all the way through the millennial age. there will be a period of purgation. But if they're faithful and reach the end of the age, when they come to the portals of the land, there will be some that say, I don't think we can enter in. When the Israelites got to the portals of the promised land at Kadesh Barnea, they said, let's send spies in there. God didn't tell them to send spies. He says, I've given it to you. And sometimes you think you couldn't have the victory over your own heart. You can have it only because God says, I'll drive them out. But you've got to do your part. If you don't do your part, it's because you're disobedient to what I want. And you're unfaithful. And you're not going to have the victory. You say, I know I do so and so and so. I ought not to do it. I know it's wrong to do it. But somehow or other, I keep on doing it. Well, naturally, you're going to keep on doing it because of the fact that you haven't striven. You remember how Jacob of old wanted a blessing when the angel wrestled with him? He says, I'm not going to let you go till I get the blessing. You think that angel couldn't have subdued Jacob? Oh, yes. In just a moment, he could have had Jacob lying on the floor and was writhing in pain and unable to get up. But he held back just sufficiently so that Jacob could exercise himself and prove that he was worthy of the blessing. And you know what happened? The angel changed his name and touched his side. He gave him a new name, and Jacob never walked the same again as he had before. And so you and I will have to wrestle. Oh, we are not wrestling with God in the sense that some people just anguish before him. No. But we have to prove to him that we want the blessing. We want this rest. We want this peace. Now, one of the texts there, I think it was Brother Dinwiddie mentioned about casting your cares upon the Lord. Do you know? Well, Brother Fy, don't you? I'm asking you. Don't ask me. I'm asking you. Well, we all worry sometimes. But when we worry, what are we doing? Are we casting all our burden upon the Lord who said he'd care for us? No, of course not. Are we comfortable? Are we enjoying the peace of God that surpasses all human understanding? No. Why not? Because we're as guilty as these Israelites were. We haven't the faith to believe, take hold, and step forward with our 2 feet on the promises. We step out and we say, ooh, that isn't very steady, is it? Oh, no, that's it, you see, dear friend. When God says, you can step out there boldly, even if it does bounce up and down a little bit after you get on it, you can rest assured you're not going to go through or go under. When you come to the waters, they will never overflow. So you see then, dear friends, in order to have this peace of God that surpasses all human understanding, it is contingent upon the depth of your faith, and your faith is only faith in God's sight when it is accompanied by works of faith. If Jacob of old had said, well, I'd like to have the promise, I'd like to have that blessing, and did nothing more about it, would he have had it? No, he had to strive. And God will strive with us so long as we strive. But when we cease to strive, it's because the flesh is overcome. It's because the flesh then has the victory. For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them. But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. Now you see the idea? Faith in them that heard it. Now, you and I have heard the precious promises of God. You and I can exercise ourselves in those promises. And if we do exercise ourselves in those promises, then, you see, the word which has been preached to us profits us, because within us it is mixed with faith. Somebody had said, of course, if the mountain won't come to Mohammed, Mohammed goes to the mountain. Jesus said, however, if you had faith like a grain of mustard seed, you could say to this mountain, be removed, and it would be removed. But I'm afraid that too many of us are like the little old lady looking out of the window. There was a big tree and it obscured the view of the valley below, and she says, I'm going to pray that that tree be removed. So she went to bed that night. Next morning she got up, opened the window, she says, I knew it. There the tree was, still there. I knew it. Well, of course, that wasn't the way that God intended it, but you see, that's the way it is with you and with me. Faith? Oh, yes, we have it like an umbrella. It's in the closet. When we need it, we don't have it. It says, when the Lord cometh, will he find faith in the land? Have you a faith that will protect and defend you? Anytime something goes a little askew, a little off, what do? You lose your head. What am I going to do now? If I lose my job, how am I going to support my family? Yes, if they do this, what am I going to do? I'm getting older. The girl says, well, I'm getting older, I gotta get married, and she marries any old person comes along. Telephone rings. And will you go out with me? Yes. Who are you? That's it. You see? Doesn't make any difference. That's the way we are in the matters of our faith. But with God, it says, we which have believed. You see, faith, do enter into rest. As he said, as I have sworn in my wrath, they shall not enter in, although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he spake in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise. God did rest the seventh day from all his works. And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest. Seeing therefore it remaineth that some must enter in, and they to whom it was first preached entered not because of unbelief. Again he limited a certain day, saying in David, today, after so long a time, as it is said today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Now the implication here is that Israel hardened its heart. You know, you can get so after a while that you become inured, and the things that once trouble you no longer. Perhaps in the beginning when you did a certain thing, I shouldn't have done that. Sorry, I did it. Well, then it comes again, and all this time you do it again, I think, yeah. Maybe I'm a little too conscientious about it. And the first thing you do it again. After a while, conscience tries to tell you it's wrong. But as conscience seeks to admonish you and call to you, it says, it's wrong. It's wrong. After a while, you don't hear it. You become inured. That's what it means, dear friend, that the Spirit of the Lord is withdrawn. And it can mean the second death. In other words, if there's anything that is important to us in this day, oh yes, we're all interested in the prophecies and all of these things. Wonderful. But the important thing is to get yourself ready, not forsaking these other things, taking them into account. But there's nothing more important than making your own calling and election sure. And you'll notice, today, harden not your hearts. I don't know whether you've ever seen the, I know before we had that black top put on our driveway there, it was just stones and dirt and stuff, and when it rained or when it snowed, oh, that would be just mush, slop, slop as you walked along, just mud. But dear friends, when the sun came out, and all the rain and the water had gone, the sun would make a piece of brick out of that wall. You couldn't get a pickaxe into it. The sun would harden it. But the same sun which would harden that clay would cause butter to melt. The same God, the same Holy Spirit, the same love of God in one softens the heart and prepares it and makes it ready for his blessing. In others, he hardened Pharaoh's heart. You understand? But dear friends, it depends upon you and it depends upon me. There is a time in which God will strive, but there is a time when his striving ceases because of the flesh. He says here, for Jesus had, if Jesus, the word here should be Joshua because it's the Greek word Jesus which means Joshua. For if Joshua had given them rest, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? In the 21st chapter of Joshua, in the 21st verse, or rather the 43rd to the 45th verse of Joshua. And the Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. And the Lord gave them rest round about. This was rest from their enemies. The rest, which was the rest in God, they did not attain. According to all that he sware unto their fathers, and these... And there stood not a man of all their enemies before them, and the Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. Now that's what it should be for you and for me. In our battles with the Canaanite that dwells within the heart, God will give us the victory. You couldn't have it. You can't battle against the flesh. It's been with you for 6,000 years. You couldn't have the victory. Only God can give it to you. And so you see, God gave them rest round about according to all that he sware unto their fathers. And there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hands. That wonderful, if you have faith enough, God will give you the victory over the worst enemy that you have, even if that enemy is self. And there failed not, he says, aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel, all came to pass. But in the 95th Psalm, David, in after years, he has something else to say about this. In the 95th Psalm, under inspiration in the 7th verse, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. Today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your heart as in the provocation, as in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works. 40 years long was I grieved with that generation, and said, it is a people that do err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. And so, dear friends, you and I, as the antitypical Israel of God, it will not be an error of judgment that keeps us out of the kingdom. It will be an error of the heart. It will be because we have allowed our hearts to become inured. We're not moved by the Holy Spirit as we once were. When we first came into the truth, how we loved it. We thought everybody should hear about it. And we did everything we possibly could to prove that we were worthy of it. But as time has come on, we've gotten older, a little more sedate, and of course, a little more sophisticated. So now we feel that we no longer need that. But that's just it, dear friends. Let us fear lest this promise of entering into God's rest, symbolized by the great seventh day in which God rested from the work of creation and left it in the hands of Jesus till the end of the seventh day, when it will be returned to him. He's entered into his rest. And the rest that God gives us will be a rest like unto his. It'll be identified with a peace that surpasses all human understanding. Others will be troubled. Others will be worried. Others will fret. Others will succumb. But you, because you made God, which is thy God, my God, thy habitation. And with this, dear friends, we're going to close. We're just going to read to you a portion of the 91st, or the 90th Psalm, rather. And in this Psalm, no, it is the 91st, I'm sorry, dear friends, the 91st Psalm. In this Psalm, Jesus speaks. He speaks to you and to me. He says, surely he, Jehovah, will deliver thee from the snare of the fowler, from the noisome pestilence. He'll cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor of the arrow that flieth by day, nor for the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth the noonday. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but will not come nigh thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked. Now, because thou hast made Jehovah, which is my Jesus, refuge, even the Most High Jehovah, thy habitation, there shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. They shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. Thou shalt tread upon the lion and the adder, the young lion and the dragon shall not trample, but thou shalt trample under feet. And then Jehovah, God himself, speaks. He says, because he, the one to whom Jesus was speaking, the church of the gospel dispensation, because he hath set his love upon me, Jehovah, therefore I, Jehovah, will deliver him, and I'll set him on high. Because he hath known my name, he shall call upon me, and I will answer. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation. May God bless that too.
Well, thank you, Brother Fry, and I'm sure that's just the message we all need. So, faith in God. And as the brother brought out, Jesus says, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? And he brought about the great and precious promises, not only know them mentally. A lot of people know them mentally, but they don't know them experimentally. So this is really a real lesson. You know, we were praying the day before we came to the meeting that the Lord would bless the speaker, Brother Fry, today, and he has blessed me. And I'm sure he's given us a lot of food for thought. A lot of food for thought. And I hope, brethren, you have all been taking notes. And when you go home tonight, why just going over these notes and refreshing your mind with what the brother brought to your attention from this wonderful book of Stephen. Now, a good, and I think that Brother Fry also suggested that what we all need, really, is a deeper consecration, greater faith. So we're going to sing And one of Brother Fire's favorite hymns.
Right.
It's 208. Isn't that what it means, Brother Fire? Right. Deeper consecration. 208.
You know, it's so well, dear friends, that we won't even bother waiting one.
Thank you.